I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
When I was a kid, there was a place down the street from my house. Everybody in the neighborhood would go to this barbershop. And it was, you know, these three guys, these like three old Italian guys. No, they're like, I think two of them are Mexican. Maybe one of them, they're all Mexican. Never mind, they're not Italian. East LA, not New York. they're all, but there was two guys that were bigger. One of them had white hair, and the other guy was like, he'd whistle in your face, like bad breath, when he was like cutting your hair. And you're like, oh, God, ugh. And then there was the guy, Frank, and I remember the skinny guy, Frank, because everybody wanted Frank, and nobody, like, really wanted the other guy with the stinky breath or the old guy that fuck up your shit. So, yeah. Years later, I start sweeping hair up there, and that was, like, one of my first jobs.
Hmm. That's wild. That's my husband's first job.
Sweeping up hair?
Mm-hmm. At a barbershop.
It wasn't my first job, you know.
My first job
was selling drugs.
Was it?
Really? As a tiny child?
No, I didn't make that into a job. I used to steal people in sixth grade. I used to steal people's karaoke.
I have no idea.
You know what karaoke is? You guys know? Have you heard of Hiro no Pekkle or Sanrio? The people that created Hello Kitty.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so you guys know Hello Kitty.
Sure.
Yeah. And so back in the early 90s in L.A. and in Japan and China and stuff like that, they had this, they had characters come out that were Hello Kitty's friends.
Okay.
And they became more popular than Hello Kitty because they were doper. It was like a frog, you know? His name was Karopi.
Okay.
It was pretty tight, you know? It was a frog and everybody liked it. And then there was like the duck, Hiro no Pekkle, and there were like these Asian like icons that we really liked. So everybody would get school supplies every year. They would get stuff from Sanrio Surprise, the place that sells these toys and school supplies with these figures on it. So they were expensive as shit, too. It was like a pencil, like a four-pack of pencils was like $6 or something like that. You know? So I couldn't afford it, obviously. So what I would do is I would go into people's backpacks. I would sneak into people's backpacks, and I would steal their karaoke. Mm-hmm. I would lift it, and then I would sell it to somebody in another class, and I would leave school every day with like $12. And one of my friends, Jeff Hsu, he came up to me. He's like, I was like, check it out. One day I was like being like, what's his name? Fucking the kid from Terminator 2. What's his name?
Yeah, I can't.
What is his name?
Edward Furlong.
John
Connor. I was like John Connor, dude, with the cash. I was like, easy money. And this guy's like, whoa, how'd you make that money? And I was like, dude, I can't tell you. He's like, oh, come on, you gotta tell me. I was like, dude, I can't tell you. He's like, oh, I was like a day later, I was like, all right, dude, I'm stealing people's grubby shit. You want in on this shit? He's like, oh, dude, okay, wow. And Blake blew his mind. And so then all of my friends started stealing everybody's shit. All of my friends stole, like, all the kids' karaoke pencils and boxes. I stole some stuff from my friend from across the street.
I was waiting for you to tell
it
me
was
that.
Fucked up. Me and him still talk to you because we're still best friends, and I remind him of that sometimes. And I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. I stole your karaoke when we were younger. But anyways, so there was a whole scam going on, and then the teachers found out about it, and it became a big deal.
Oh,
like,
no.
So everybody was like, we don't know who's doing this, but somebody's going around, and they're taking people's pencils and erasers, and they're selling it to other people. So don't buy the stuff, you know, don't steal. That's it. And then everybody started locking up their stuff a little bit better. So I'd like to think that I had to change everybody.
Yeah. No.
So then I started making my own arts, and I started drawing karaoke. And I would draw it. I drew it, and I made like a little makeshift like pencil holder that I taped to my desk, and I put pencils in there, and I drew karaoke on it, and that became a hot seller. And I started making those for people, and I had like my own, like people bought those off me for like $5. And I was,
man, you're was before like your the, time in the Etsy the, world, man.
I was the karaoke king.
Yeah. Wild. I wonder if that was specifically a popular thing in LA.
What's that?
Because, like, I never heard of that. Yeah, and we're pretty much
yeah,
the same
maybe
age.
It was just, yeah, there's, I mean, there's a diverse population. I grew up in Hacienda Heights and, like, West Covina and Covina and stuff like that. So there's a lot of this diverse population of people. It's mostly Latino and Asian in those two areas.
Yeah, I grew up in Boston. It was just white.
There's a Buddhist temple where I lived. There was a Buddhist temple, like, a mile from my house. It's called the Shilai Temple. And it's, like, one of three Buddhist temples in the world, Shilai temples. And the one of them was there. I got a scholarship from there once.
From the temple?
Yeah. They gave me a scholarship when I was in high school.
Wow.
And I spent it on an ounce of weed. Remember that. This is all just coming back to me.
They gave you
now.
Cash?
Yeah, they gave me a check. I was like, they're like, he will buy books. And I was like, yes, I will. I'm like, trust me, I'm going to college, but not right now.
Did you wink at them when you took the check?
It was like $200. It was like $200. I mean, come on, man.
There's one book.
I'm a poor, right, that's poor kid from book. The fucking burbs, man. What are you doing? What are you doing to me?
That's so funny.
So where did you go to college?
I went to, I started off in community college.
Yep.
And which was amazing because I was expelled from high school. And then I went to...
Really?
And then I just... Well, one day I took acid and I was like, oh my God, I need to go to college and I need to get the fuck out of here. My parents didn't go to college. We live in a poor neighborhood. I got to figure out how to get out of here. So in my head, I was like, college is the key.
That acid made you go to college.
Yeah. I mean, it made me turn around everything I was doing. I was like, oh my God, I need to stop hanging out with all these fucking troublemakers and shit and start going, taking full-time classes and stuff like that. Because I got expelled and... from one school, and then I went to an independent school, and I got expelled from that. So I was like, oh, shit. So I was like, dropout by the time I was 16. So they do this thing where they invite you back to college, but it's only they invite you back to the bad school where you can make up your credits, but it has to be, you can only take 3 classes during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So really, after a year goes by, you're farther behind than you were before. So I learned the system, and I started taking 6 classes a day. And then I got into like some special class, and I got to take 7 classes a day, which was like me and like 4 other nerds, because I had become a straight like anime nerd. Just I was like techno weed school. That's it. I was like, I'm gonna get good grades. And so I got
really
good grades.
Were you 16 at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, 16. Yep. And I came back and I went to a cholo school with like all the gangsters and stuff like that. And I was like the best, of course. You know, I was like, oh, I'm gonna be the best student here. It wasn't that hard. You know, everybody else was like from fucking way worse backgrounds than me that were struggling a little bit more than I was. So I picked it up, and so that's how I got that Shilai scholarship. And then I got a scholarship to go to Mount SAC. So I went to Mount San Antonio College.
Cool.
Yeah, community college. And then I transferred. I got a full scholarship to Illinois State.
Wow, so then you got out of the state. So then you were like, great, how do I get out of California? This is how I do it? Or did it just happen
to
fall
in your
lap?
No, I wanted to go to USC.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I wanted to go to USC to go to the film program.
Sure.
That's what I wanted to do. It was something like that. And I was like, I'm going to... Because at Mount SAC, it's such a good community college. You actually can, students actually do, like 70% of those students do transfer to the school they want to.
Right.
And a lot of those are Ivy League schools and private schools and the best schools in the nation, like UCLA.
Wow, it sounds like a great community college.
It is. It's a national champion community college. Yeah,
what does Mount SAC stand for?
It stands for Mount San Antonio College.
Oh, okay.
It stands for Mount San Antonio College.
I just have never heard of it, so that's why I was like, Mount SAC. I thought it was going
to
be like Sacramento or
something.
Well,
a lot of people like to say Mount SAC as in, you know, their nut sacks and stuff like that to make fun of our college. Yeah,
that's where I figured you were going with that, yeah.
Yeah, that's where James Gonzalez comes from, is from Mount San Antonio College. I worked there for a while, and I got a job on campus, and I worked for campus events, and the guy that gave me the job was named James Gonzalez, and he's this very tall Mexican guy.
He had like a little bit of a lisp, and he talked like this. And he liked me a lot, because my last name's Gonzalez, too. Except my last name is Gonzalez with an S, which means that you're more white than you're Mexican. And
is that the code?
The code?
The code
the
for
S
it to be the S?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, Gonzalez. Oh, but yours is going to be with an S.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's sort of, I think, a whitewash of the original. Maybe the original is Gonzales. There's a Gonzales, Texas with an S.
Huh.
We're not too far from that.
Whitewashed in and of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you went to Illinois State.
Mm-hmm.
I left
behind James Gonzales, and I moved on.
Moved on from James?
I did, but it was a good time working with James. It was like $15 an hour, and it was like the 2001 or 2000.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty sweet job. And
yeah.
I would work like 18 hours a week or something like that. Or when a special events came up, that's when you would work or whatever. One time we were working, and
he's like, okay, guys, I need you to set up these chairs over here in Building 1C, and I need you to come back and meet me over here at the Student Life Center.
So we did that, and we came back to the Student Life Center like in 20 minutes. And we're like supposed to, you know, take like 3 hours. Like,
okay, guys, it looks like you guys kind of finished kind of early here. So why don't you guys come back over here with me into the back, and we'll talk about work.
And I was like, okay. I was like, cool, we don't have to work. All right, he's going to talk to us, and we're going to get paid.
Yeah.
So he did. He took us to this, like, Student Life Center area where it was a big open area, and there's, like, couches there and stuff. And
he's like, yeah, go ahead, have a seat, guys.
I'm like, okay, cool. We sat down. We're like, yeah, fuck it. We didn't have phones or anything back then, so we're just, like, sitting down. Ooh. And he's like,
you know, in Japan, people sleep standing up.
We're like, what, dude? What is he talking about? But I'm trying to be nice, so I'm like, oh, really? Wow.
It's true, actually.
Well, I know, but it's weird, too.
Yeah,
to say
no,
that
it's
to
weird.
Your student,
yeah.
To your student, or just somebody that's like a student.
No, I just found it out like 6 months ago, so that's why it's
well,
like...
Well, do they all sleep? I don't think they all sleep standing.
No.
Side note, that one of my friends moved to Japan, and apparently, like, it's seen as better to sleep during the day in the midst of your activities than it is to sleep during the night. So they won't sleep during the night. They'll, like, stay up doing work, getting stuff done, reading, whatever it is. They just sleep because they're trying to get, like, more work done.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when they go to their jobs, if they're in a meeting and they fall asleep, like, in a meeting, they're not in trouble for falling asleep. They're like, look at how hard he's been working. He's sleeping in this meeting. He's such a hard worker.
Hmm.
And I thought it was such a weird article that I read, but one of my friends who had moved to Japan was like, this is a real thing. Like, read this, guys. Like, this is crazy. So, sorry. Not to back up James Gonzales here, but just that's what's happening.
Well, then you're going to...
So weird.
The next thing that he says is not that. It's weird. It's weirder. He goes...
You know, people, they have pennies inside of soda can machines. You can just fall on the street, you can put some money in a machine and pull out a girl's panties.
I was like 19, so I was like, well, I guess I'd try it out, I guess. Get a can. A can of panties, please.
Excuse me.
In Japan, people like to do lots of crazy stuff, you know, like people like to do shit stuff and pee stuff.
So he really went into it.
How do you know so much about Japan?
Oh, that's also was part of what he told us. She's like, you know, I have
my wife, Okinaka, to see me. She's back in Japan, and I'm getting suited to get married to her. So I'm going to be visiting her probably about May or June. Well, the first time I met my wife, I said, hi, my name is James. And she said, my name is Okajama Yasumi. And I said, yes, I can see you just fine.
I was like,
are you making
crazy,
this up?
Mr. Gonzales? No.
This
all
is
real.
For real.
This all real stuff, man.
That's quite a line he had there.
Oh, I made up that part.
Oh, come on.
No, I know, I'm sorry.
You didn't have to tell us that.
Let me erase it. Start off right here. Can we do that?
And most of this podcast is going to end up like that.
You guys do edit it, right?
I edit it sometimes, but I don't usually because of the band.
I'm just kidding. I don't care.
I was like, I don't think anyone's going to be, like, judging the things.
Are we recording right now?
Yeah.
We are.
Oh, we've been rolling, yeah.
Yeah, it feels good. You guys kind of do this podcast like just... It's a normal, it's just people
chatting.
Talking.
Just chatting it up.
That's what I think.
I wrote down college because when we started talking about college, that seemed like a good way to start. Also, I'm excited about finding more about this story. So after James Gonzalez and Mount
after
Sac,
James Gonzalez,
you go to Illinois State.
I joined the speech team.
You leave.
I was on the speech team. I'm going to call it speech team because that's what Andy Richter does, and he always mentions it. He's like, back when I was on speech team, I would call it the speech team. I was on the speech team, and we did events, and we did really well. Our team was a national champion team. It was like really well recognized. We went to nationals my first year on the team, and we got fourth place in the nation, where we beat out like all these schools like USC and Berkeley, and we beat every school.
Nice. We're
a community college. So everybody got offered scholarships, and I got offered one from Northern Arizona University. And mm-hmm. then I got offered one from Illinois State and Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky offered me $6,000 and a full scholarship.
Oh, like just $6,000 to like hang out?
Yeah. There's nothing to do in Kentucky, right? I mean, I'm sure I probably would have been a Kentucky stoner if I went there.
Yeah, maybe. The only thing I know about Kentucky is from television shows.
Whiskey, right?
It's they have a good speech team.
Yeah, but they did. What she made you decide to distance. Go? What made you not go to Kentucky and instead go to Illinois?
Because one of the coaches there was really into slam poetry, and my coaches knew him from when they were teaching, going to school. They used to see him on the circuit, and they really liked his performance style, and they thought it was kind of like mine. My coaches are like training me to be like this awesome like performer and actor, and they kind of wanted me to go there. So I was like, all right, yeah, I'll go over here. And then I got to work with Joel Shimara in Illinois State, and I got to work with all these amazing other actors and interpreters in Illinois.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did you do slam poetry?
I did, yeah. I was did slam poetry in Chicago and Normal. I was on the Normal team, the Normal slam team in Illinois.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you do that anymore?
That's wild.
Yeah. I haven't written poetry for a really long time. It's just... I blame myself, but I think it's because I don't have a I haven't had a good computer. I need to get one, I think.
Well, I don't know. Poetry
Maybe
slams
not
are
that.
Not
I
mean, as...
There's lots of reasons I don't write anymore, but yeah, I haven't written for a while. Maybe I'll go back after this.
You mean writing in general or just poetry?
I definitely stopped writing after grad school. I just started focusing on teaching, and I kind of... all the emails and all this like information sort of has stopped me. Stopped me when I started teaching. It stopped me from writing, and then I just kind of haven't gone back.
Like the technological information? Is that what you mean?
I guess
that?
Like social media and emails and I guess talking to people one on one had been enough for me, and it didn't give me enough time to like sit down and start writing stuff. I mean, I have written. Yeah. I just don't write like I should, like, every day. I mean, when I do, it's like I'll write, you know, for, like, an hour or 2 hours, like, you know, every other week or something like that. And it's not, like, writing like you should be. Like, when you're a writer, you should, you know, you write every day.
Sure.
You know, and I don't do that every day.
I think it's hard. I think there's only a few people that I know that, like, really write every day. And most of the people that I know that write every day are people that have... already made money from like novels or stuff like that, you know, people where it's like there's some sort of financial incentive that they have. Like the rest of us mostly just write for projects, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I write when I got a show coming up, I write when I have something I'm trying to plan, but I mean, I don't write that much. I've been working on a screenplay for about 2 years, and it's like I get to it every 2 or 3 months, and I'll spend you know, every day for about a month on it, and then I take a break for 3 months and that kind of stuff. So I was like, don't beat yourself up about it. Literally, yeah. Everybody in the world does exactly that, and they have computers. So so believe me, you're fine.
Yeah, unless
I wondered, too, the idea, sorry to cut you off, but I was fascinated by the idea that you were talking about. You did the slam poetry, and you used to do a lot of writing, and then when, because I totally understand the point in your life when all of a sudden, like, the technology stuff starts coming in, and it kind of bombards you, and I appreciate that one-on-one conversations are enough, and it is. I mean, you know, if you actually talk to human beings every single day, it can be as much information, as much sort of, like, intensity as you need. Like, you don't need Facebook, you don't need any of the other crap. Because regular life is just other human beings.
And I hang out with writers. I hang out with a lot of writers in L.A. And poets and stuff like that still. And I think... never mind.
What?
I was going to say, I think they'd be mad at me for saying that I don't write every day. Because they'd be like, what do you mean you're not writing right now? You know, I should be writing. I got stuff published recently. I got I got some articles published on thedailydot.com for talking, about. They're about other comedians, but I got to talk to these guys and
write. Oh yeah, you did interviews and stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's so great. But that's a great new way of writing. I mean, think about all the different ways that you did it. You did slam poetry. You've written, so many speeches with all that work that you did. You went to grad school for it.
You've written
sketch comedy and stand-up comedy. Yeah.
Stand-up comedy.
So and
sketches.
Now you're doing interviews.
Sketches.
So I mean, it's really just. I think sometimes you know the creative mind gets. Bored of each media, and then you like, what's next? What can I do? I've checked that off my list. How do I do the next thing? Yeah, I was super impressed when you got to that interview stuff. How'd you get that opportunity?
Oh, my girlfriend works at The Daily Dot, and
great.
She's the entertainment editor, and she had a chance to... Well, they had needed somebody to interview Russell Peters, and she said, hey, I know a writer that could do that, who can interview Russell Peters. And she asked me if I could do it. And I said, yes, of course. I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, that's so fun.
So I talked to Russell Peters for, 15 minutes, being, a huge fan of Russell Peters for, 15, 16 years.
Yeah.
So I finally get to talk to him. And so I wrote this really good piece for them for that. And then they had me do some more.
Excellent.
That's so fun. How was it meeting Russell Peters?
Oh,
being a big fan.
Oh, it was. I thought it was really great. He was awesome. He was amazing. I think I could have sounded a little smarter, but that happens after you you talk and you listen to yourself.
I listen to myself on this all the time.
I listened to the interview. After it was over, I was like, oh, my God, Russell Peters is awesome. He said he wants to hang out with me. He said he wants to, meet up. He's like, he said it'd be awesome to meet me someday. And I was like, oh, my God, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, shit, I should have hung up. I should have got his contact and stay in contact. I was just like, oh, man. I was like on cloud nine. I was like, oh, this is great. He had a good conversation. He says dope. He said that was tight a couple times. And I listened to it. I listen back to the interview, and I just sound like, hey, hi, Russell, hey, man, oh, yeah, thank you so much, oh. And he says something, he's like, hey, Adam, how's it going, man, he's like, I'm driving right now, sorry if you hear the wind. I was like, oh, no, dope, that's cool, dope, and I just kept saying dope. Everything he said, I was like, dope, oh, dope, and he was telling me about... I asked him about one of his first videos that went viral. It was this video that he did, and it was a performance he did in New York at this bar or whatever, and it got recorded, and it got put online. And I asked him about that, and he said, actually, that wasn't me that put that video online. It was a promoter from the show that night that pretty much didn't get his permission to record him and then posted it online.
Oh, my God.
And so those videos, that video that guy posted went viral back in, 2004, or something like that, 2005, and it went really well. So I asked him about that, and he was like, oh, I was like, that was really cool how that video went viral. He's like, yeah, well, it wasn't cool because that guy didn't have my permission. At the time, I wanted to fly back down to New York, and I wanted to kick his ass. And I was like, dope. And he's like, he's like, yeah, okay, no, it wasn't that dope. And I was like, oh, okay, well, but it was tight.
I mean,
but it was tight that you had that video and then you got famous, huh, and you're rich now, huh?
Kind of started off from, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know. Yeah, definitely. He was already doing
it. It's hard, to when you talk to somebody that you're a fan of, not to kind of fanboy at them, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very difficult. Every one of the interviews that we've had in here where it's not somebody who we're pals with, it's nice being able to talk to people like you because it's we're all comfortable with each other. We know each other. You know what I mean? We know that we have each other's best interests in mind, that kind of stuff. When you talk to other people, you're not really sure. A couple, maybe about a month ago, we had Josh Gondelman. who came in to TNM and did stand-up. Uh-huh. And I had been a huge fan of his on Twitter and followed his comedy. And, like, when I found out he was coming to town, and not just in town, but, like, to the New Movement, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, what? Hmm. So when I listened to the... When I went back and listened to the podcast, I sound a little fangirl. I'm kind of like, so tell me about what you did. Oh, my God, you're so cool. And it's like... What kind of a fucking asshole am I, right? But, you know, it's fine. You know, and then you have other co-hosts, hopefully, that can temper you. Wendell, of course, had no idea who he was, so it was, like, really funny for him to be all like, so, dude, so where are you from? Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, it's just, like, way tempered.
Yeah, that's good. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah, but, you know.
It's a good interview.
I think being a fan kind of always puts you on a one-sided, like, relationship with them because you already know so much about them. They know nothing about you.
Yeah.
And so it's hard not to have that come across in some way. You know?
It's not like you put the audio up anyway, right? You wrote stuff based right. on the conversation.
Yeah.
Well, you go. That's the saving grace of that whole situation.
Yeah, as long as you didn't type, then I said dope, you're fine with it.
Well, now, you know, now they can listen to this podcast and sue me probably just for...
Why?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, the name of the article wasn't dope, was it?
Ugh, almost. Good thing I had somebody to edit it. Editing
Russell
is key.
Peters is dope.
Editing is key.
Editing is key, especially when you're a writer. You need somebody to look over your stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm a good writer. I'm just switching it all up. I'm going to go from I don't write to I'm one of the best writers that you guys have.
You can be both. Met. Yeah.
Can be both.
You can
right?
be both.
Yeah. That's
absolutely.
A good point. You can be you can also be bad at writing and good at writing, I think, too,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Especially different styles, like even just all the things we've been talking for such a short time. You've told us so many different styles of writing that you've been part of. It's just like, oh, cool. Because like when I moved to New York City, I started doing stand up with a crowd that was a slam poetry crowd, and slam poetry had kind of gone out of fashion. Like there were still some slam poetry events, but there really weren't as many. So all those people that were doing slam poetry were now doing like performance art stuff at stand-up open mics. And so I was always in awe of this slam poetry idea because I was like, what does that mean? Tell me all about it. How does that even work? You know, and I went and watched a few of the things and I'd be like, what is that? I don't even know how to do that thing. Like, so even just the idea of that, I'd like love, if there are any videos of you doing slam poetry, like I'd want to watch them. I promise not to link them.
You haven't seen my performances?
No, it's so exciting.
I have one online. It's called Amethyst Black. Have you heard of that?
Oh, wait, the character?
Yeah, that's a slam poetry character that I created for a show called The Encyclopedia Show in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, because I've seen that.
Yeah, The Encyclopedia Show is in Austin. It was hosted by Ralphie Hardesty and Mike Grotman and Carrie Lindau for a while. And I was actually producing the one in Los Angeles, the Hollywood version of that show, with some other people from USC at the time. And I created this character called Amethyst Black, and sort of a satire pop culture sort of poet. It's Goth Republican.
That's so great.
Goth Republican.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have no idea, because I've seen that video with the character work, and I just thought, you know, Adam's good at making characters. You know, I just saw that, and I guess looked at it from the point of view.
That's a poem, and the other, I did a French character that was also a poet.
Interesting.
I did these two characters, a Goth Republican slam poet who's an actor also, and then a French guy. Who's also an actor in LA who's trying to make it, who's a poet.
Did you also do poetry just as yourself?
Yeah, I did. I did some, yeah. I did a lot of serious stuff and, I guess not that serious. But, I did the whole range sort of.
I think it's an interesting way to like be able to do different content by using a character to write things that you may not be accepted as, you know, that type of whatever poetry it's about.
Yeah.
But then if you use a character, then people are more accepting of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a break and listen to that slam poem that I got there. We'll be right back. Well, we just
really
got done.
This works.
Welcome back for the break, everybody. We just got done watching Amethyst Black by Adam Waitman.
I'll link to it if you'd like.
Might as well. Top 40 voice you're going there.
Yeah, I did radio in college.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Man, look at this. So funny. It's what one of the most interesting things that I'm realizing sitting in the room, because we interviewed a lot of people, like, you're probably going to be episode like 44 or something like that. And that's a lot of people to have talked to. Some of them I know really well, and some of them don't know very well. Thanks.
Yeah.
But what opens up to me is that so many of us sell ourselves short of what we can do and what we are great at.
Yeah.
And it's like, Adam, I've known you for years. I didn't know all these great things.
I know,
like,
it's my
fault. Are you fucking kidding me right now? You do all this? Like, you know how to do this? Why haven't you taught me how to do this? Like, it's so crazy.
It's because I got so used to everybody knowing who I was in L.A. and, like, the circle of friends I think that I knew. I would expose myself and I'd be like, well, you know, I do this, I'm an actor, I do poetry, I do all this. It was just like, boom, 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 this is who I am. And then when I moved to Austin, it was like, I'm just like, hey, I'm gonna do some comedy.
Sure.
I'm just like you, man. I wanna do some comedy.
That's so funny. What was the radio experience?
Radio experience was really good. It was with this guy named Kaysen Smith, who is one of my mentors from the college. I need to contact him and say hello, but he was probably one of the biggest influences that I had also in college was my program director from the radio station. I wanted to be famous always, so I was thinking, how can I be famous? And I was like, I'll study radio and I'll go the radio route and that'll be good because I'll be famous through radio like Ryan Seacrest or something. And so I walked.
Is he famous through radio?
Yeah.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
I did not know that either.
Yeah, he started off in L.A. So I was like, okay, I'll go into the radio station. And when I went to the radio station, it was like, it was like all underground. You know, it was like one of the professors was the program director, but she was very loose. She was like letting the students do whatever they want. So there was like late night weed sessions, I think, in the radio station, and there was like underground hip hop going on, which is dope. These different shows, but it wasn't like a professional radio station where you can get a job after that.
Right.
So Kaysen came in and he was like, we're going to turn this into a program where kids can get jobs in radio stations after they work here. And he didn't kick everybody out, but he just cleared the format and he said, we're going to make a CHR, top hits, urban R&B. We're going to make pretty much a station that will allow students to work with every genre of music and then pick which genre of radio they want to get into and then go from there, kind of. So if you want to get into newscasting, then you become a newscaster. Top of the hour, there's always a newscast now. If you want to be a DJ, then you would learn how to mix your, the CDs and songs, play songs, basically, and voiceovers and stuff like that. So he changed it. He made it really good. I went in to go to the radio station when it was, like, underground hip-hop, and everybody just, like, laughed me out. And I was like, hey, I would like to be part of the radio station. They're like, you got to talk to this guy over here. And I was like, hey, I'd like to be in the radio station. And they're like, yeah, go away. And I was like, okay. But I didn't go away. I kept on coming back in.
Nice.
And I went up. I remember this. One of my best friends from the radio station, he's still one of my best friends. His name is Dan Ross. Me and him have done videos. We wanted to do music videos. Me and him worked on that Ron Jeremy video together and a Bone Thugs and Harmony music video together. After this is like 2013, I worked on. But back in college, back in 2003, I remember walking to the radio station. I saw my friend Dan, who I later became a producer with in LA, and I was like, "Hey, man, I'd really like to listen to your radio show one day." And he looked at me and went, "Nah, man." And he just walked away.
Straight up.
Just walked away from me out the hall. And I was like, okay. I was just used to getting shot down at that point. So I was like, whatever.
Wow.
And then we became best friends. Yeah. After that. So I...
I really love how you said no, man.
Yeah.
He didn't like the change. So he left. And I stuck around.
Oh.
And I became one of the... I became the production director and all this other stuff at the radio station.
So you like kept asking until Kaysen Smith was there, and then finally
he
was like,
Kaysen was like,
yes,
yeah,
sir.
This kid wants to work and learn, so yeah, let's put him to work. And I became the production director. And then I also, from that, I became the voiceover for the school automated system. So when you call in, it's me.
That's awesome.
Is it still you?
Yeah. I'm still on there.
That's so great.
This is like 15 years ago.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. So when you call this, it's like, thank you for calling Mount San Antonio College. One moment, we'll be right with you. Hey, girl, what's up? How you doing? You know, just... press 1 to see me.
I'm gonna call
it. Hello. I pop out of the phone. Hello, I'm picking my boogers.
What? Sounds like a great way to get chicks.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Ladies love books.
Yeah, I know. That was one thing that was funny. I never thought, like, I did think that, like, doing radio would, like, make me hot.
You never heard the phrase "a face for radio"?
Oh, of course. I had a face for radio. I had acne, all kinds of acne.
I was like, what are you talking about? You're handsome, man.
Well, you know, I had my outbreaks.
I was like, but 10 years ago, you were an acne man?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I would have my outbreaks where I was, like, walking around, afraid to look at people.
Putting a hood
over top, yeah. Pimple
on my head. I get it.
No.
I still get them. I still get big pimples.
Huh. I mean, sure. Occasionally here and there.
First year in college is when, like, acne hit me. Yeah,
no, for sure.
It wasn't high school when you got to the school. I got to college, and then like a friend from high school like came over and was like, oh, "What happened?" And I was like, "Oh, fuck you!"
What school did you go to? What school did you go to?
Well, I started at UT with the summer thing, and then got like not invited back. Then went to ACC, and then got back into UT. So I've kind of been here in Austin.
What do you mean you didn't get invited back
yet? But it was provisional, so you did, like, 12 hours in the summer. It was, like, math, English, chemistry, and something else. I can't remember.
And then
so
you had like to get invited?
So it was, like, post-high school college camp to, like, maybe get into UT?
Too many people are applying to UT, and you weren't in the top 10, so you didn't get a spot. So you had to maintain a certain GPA, and I did not.
What was your GPA?
I don't even remember.
You don't? I remember all my GPAs.
No. Really?
Yeah. My final one wasn't too bad, but that first semester really screwed up my GPA when I kind of came back in. Because I went to ACC, and it was a 3.89, something like that.
It's pretty good.
But none of those transfer back in, just the credits.
Oh.
So yeah, then I started back with my two, dumb. Whatever it was.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So.
That's interesting. It's different in every state. The community college system in California is the biggest educational system in the United States. The community college circuits, yeah. All the community colleges over there are really solid. They're really, really, really good.
It's good to know.
Yes.
I'm just thinking, like, you know, for people, because I talk to a lot of people that are younger and who are like, you know, might not know how to get into college or they think they can't.
Yes,
so
go to community college.
It's great to know.
Sure. Go to ACC. Go to DuPage County. Go to DuPage. Go to Houston Community College. All these, they got some pretty good community colleges in Texas. They got really good ones. They got national champion colleges here too.
Wow. Yeah, but Texas is hard. Like, certainly living in Austin, like, UT is, like, really hard to get into, especially
it's
now.
Worse, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's been a couple of years since you were there, and it's, like, crazy hard. If you're not, like, top of your class, it's like Harvard level at this point, where it's, like, they're just not letting you in unless you have something to give them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, shit.
Yeah, I don't know if they do the top 10 anymore either.
They probably do the top 5, really.
Because that was a thing for a while here in Texas, was if you got top 10... then you were guaranteed admission to whatever state school, like public state school.
I don't think they could do that anymore.
Yeah.
Too many, because, like, kids are, the top 10 crowd are, like, those kids that are, like, ripping themselves to shreds, like, trying to get that stuff done. You're like, oh, God, if I don't do this, you know, like, they're the one whose parents are calling in being like, why did you give my son a B+? Mm-hmm. Like, well, he fucking didn't do his work, so that's why.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so... it's a whole different world now in the world of, like, helicopter parents and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends who are high school teachers, and they're, you know, they'll tell me about how their parents will be the ones who are the most annoying, that, like, call in and say things to them, like, harangue them for issues. And they're like, if you'd like, I'd be happy to receive this abuse from your child, but you have nothing to do with my class because you're not in it. So have them call me. And we can have this chat all day.
Yeah. Well, high school is different. High school is, you have to deal with their parents because you're working with minors. And that's why I taught community college after I got my master's degree. I went directly into a full-time professorship in LA at my former college at Mount SAC. And,
so great.
And I was teaching there. And the great thing about that is that everybody's 18 and over, and you're working with people that are, you know, non-traditional students who are coming in trying to change their life. You know, who didn't do good in high school or, you know, have worked after high school and they want to better themselves. So you're working with a group of people that are all trying to, that want to be there.
Yeah, sounds like a good crowd.
Because, it is. It really is. Good crowd. Good crowd.
Well, so much better than the people who are just, like, feel entitled and then, like, they go to school and they, like, go straight off. I mean, like, I have so many friends who, you know, when they first got out of high school and they just went straight to college, they, like, just didn't appreciate it. Like, I mean, if I wasn't, if I wasn't, you know, going for theater, which, you know, in and of itself is kind of a fuck-off degree, but it's like, I was going for theater because I always wanted to be in theater, so I got a degree in theater. And, I mean, it's like an overpriced experience at working at a community theater. But at the same time, it was like a great experience for me. It did for me what I needed at that moment. And I traveled, like, that's why it's interesting to me when you said that you were from California and then you went to Illinois. Because for me, I'm from Boston and I went to Texas. And so, like, to travel so far away from your comfort zone, like, is such a crazy change. It's, like, such a crazy thing. Yeah. And
I did it again, and then I went to Iowa. After that, I got a full scholarship to go to Iowa to
for coach, grad school?
Yeah, for grad school, to coach the speech team and be a teaching assistant.
Great.
And so I did that, and then I did it again. After 6 years of being in the Midwest, I went back to L.A., and then I was there, and then I went to Austin. The biggest shift is Austin, moving here, because I'm older now, and I have no experience working with the colleges out here, really. I don't know anybody. I know everybody in California. I know, like, all these teachers and professionals that are working in the field of instruction. And out here, I don't know anyone. I know, like, two or three people, and they're working for high schools and stuff like that. So it's been a huge change coming from L.A. to Austin because I don't have a job.
Why did you decide to do it? Why did you decide to make the move?
Because I thought that it would be better for me.
Like, you just needed to change, or...?
Kind of, yeah. I kind of wanted to... I knew what it was like to be outside of California, having lived in Illinois and Iowa, and I thought I should probably move for a while, kind of get a little bit... grow up a little bit, and then maybe come back and figure stuff out. Or maybe I just felt like I needed to leave and figure something out that I didn't know what it was. I thought I was going to come out here to do poetry. I was doing stand-up in L.A., but I thought I was going to focus on doing poetry out here. I was working for an independent publishing company in Long Beach called Right Bloody Publishing, and it's the biggest independent publishing company in the United States, and it's run by a comedian, Derek Brown, and he works with all these famous poets, and I was writing at the time, and I was thinking, okay, I'm going to go to Texas, and I'll be able to write more poetry. And I came out here and I started doing it, and I was like, ooh. I don't know if I want to do this, because the crowd, the slam poetry crowd out here and the poetry community out here is a lot more intense than what I expected.
Really?
It's really young. It's really young, and it's very... I went to the Spider House Ballroom Slam a couple times with Chappie, C. Schultz, and some other people. And
so wild.
The young people, you know Chappie, the young people were just, they had so much more to say. And I mean, it was stuff I had heard before, but they're also being passionate, and it was like, okay, I don't have that. I don't have that competitiveness for me to make you like my stuff because it needs to appeal to you. So I'm going to stop doing that. And then I just started doing comedy.
Interesting. Yeah, Chappie's probably like the number one slam poet I knew when I was in New York, which was such a funny thing when I found out that was a connection of ours.
I have his, I have like this photo album of his that I need to give him back. I need to send that to him.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think he's here anymore.
No, he's in Ohio. Maybe he's in Michigan now. I think, Michigan.
Facebook will tell me.
I don't know. Yeah.
I was like, I can find
funny dude, man. Funniest guy. One of the funniest guys I ever met. He's, like, one of my inspirations in comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was one of the people that, like, I first met when I went to New York City. He was at Bowery Poetry Club, where they were doing slam poetry, and he was a bartender at Bowery Poetry Club, and, like, when I moved to New York City and started doing comedy, he was, like, one of the elders of the community. Like, so... it's just so wild, like, just that one connection that I found out years after that we had, I was just like, what? No way! Like, you knew him, and that's so wild, you know? Yeah, I mean, Two, like, he was one of the people that was still doing slam poetry just at the open mics. Like, he'd work the open mic that I would go perform at, and then he and a few other people would go up, and their act would be the slam poetry. And he'd just be like, ah, the crowd was so into it and loved it so much. So it was like, and it was such a supportive crowd. That was the beauty of Bowery Poetry Club at that time, and just all that connection between people. It was really so great in that moment in my life. And that was like 2002. So it was really interesting how that was. I was there for about 5 years. And then myself came back to Texas. But it was like so wild. Yeah, and then he came down. I couldn't believe it when I found out he was in Austin. And I just ended up seeing him at like comic book conventions and stuff like that.
I knew him through Derek Brown and through doing forensics because both of them did forensics, speech and debate. Also, so there was a lot of people have done forensics. That's why I think it's such a great thing. I mean, if you're top probably like 15 or top 20 or 30, and you're on the forensics team, you're in, and you're gonna get a scholarship, you know, to wherever you want to go if you're good at doing forensics or whatever. So there's all these people that have done forensics. Oprah did it. Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Adam Sandler, Andy Richter, my duo partner. Back at Mount San Antonio College, Sona Mufsessian. She is Conan O'Brien's assistant.
Great.
Right now. She got the job when he moved back to L.A. Mm-hmm. She applied for that. What? She was working at NBC, and I think she was working on Scrubs, and then she applied for a job being the assistant for Conan. And I know the story here. She got the interview, and in the interview, I think it was like two or three people in the room, and there was a psychology chair there. You know, one of those things you lay in and you know, you talk to your psychologist or whatever, or therapist, therapy chair. So she came in and she sat directly on it and she's like, okay, I'm ready. And they loved her from that point on. And they said, you're hired. And they hired her to work for Conan. So she's best friends with Conan right now. She knows him very well.
They just like that joke or whatever?
Yeah, she's charismatic. She's very funny.
That's so fun.
Yeah, she's very smart and very funny.
And clearly can handle a wild personality.
Yeah, she's one of those people that can do stuff really easily. Like, you're like, oh, hey, man, my bike broke, the chain's broke, and I got this bike in, you know, Japan like 30 years ago. And she'll be like, oh, here, I got the chain right here. It's like,
well, that's
she like
my
pulls
backpack.
It up on her phone. She's like, I know guy, you know. So she gets stuff done. She's awesome, and she's Armenian too. I'd say you wouldn't guess that, but yeah. Mufsessian, anything with an A-I-N.
Huh.
At the end is Armenian. So she's Armenian, and so she's doing wonders for them, for the Armenian community. Hello to the Armenian community.
She and
by the
Kardashians.
Way, just saying hi. I don't know who that is, what character that is. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's okay. We like to pretend that we have all sorts of audiences. We've talked to our Austrian audience. We've talked to our Russian audience.
I should have been doing that from the start. Wouldn't have been saying all the things I've said.
No, you're these stories are so great. I'm learning so much. It's so awesome.
You know, there's just so much that people just don't know about me because no one ever cares to ask, you know, what's Adam Waitman's background, and who cares? He's puking on April's shoes.
Is there a story there?
No.
Either the voice or April.
I knew a girl named April in high school, in junior high. She's kind of cute. I had a crush on her.
We didn't
puke
on her?
She has like a deformed face.
What?
Just kidding.
I was thinking, what?
I did know in April. I don't know if she has a deformed face anymore. She hit me in the tooth once with a racket. Well, the racquetball hurt real bad. It was an accident, but...
That's what she said anyways, right?
Yeah, she was laughing, so...
Who knows?
When you went to grad school in Iowa, was it... I know that there is one school, and I'm not sure which school it is, that has that, like, summer writing program.
Iowa.
Was it that one that you went worked
no,
at?
No, I went to the University of Northern Iowa.
Oh, okay.
I think that's Iowa State.
Oh, okay.
Or the University of Iowa. One of those.
Yeah, I'm not sure. All I know is that a few writers that I knew in New York had gone and done the summer in Iowa and worked on their projects.
Yeah,
so.
I went down there to study sometimes because one of my professors was teaching there in grad school. And so I'd go meet with him for a special project that we're working on, working with I forgot what it was we were going.
That's okay.
Cares, right?
Some years ago.
Yeah. But no, the University of Northern Iowa program was really good. They have a poetry magazine that's out that's very famous that they run out of the English department there. The Northern Review. That's what it's called, the Northern Review.
Right on.
The Northern Review. So I worked with the Northern Review for a while under Vince Gotira, who's my poetry professor, who's so brilliant, and he taught me how to write poetry so wonderfully. It was a good experience over there.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Vince Gutierrez. You are the man, bro.
Oh, man. So when you came to Texas and slam poetry was kind of not your crowd, what made you decide to get into comedy? Or is you always... I did the Groundlings in L.A.
Yeah, I did the Groundlings in L.A. and I was doing a little bit of stand-up in L.A.
When did you do that?
My first time doing stand-up in L.A., I met Dave Ross. He was there at the Sunset Room, and he was doing his set. And of course, I went up and I did like a poem, and I did like, I did a RoboCop poem, and I did hello.
I think somebody's doing.
I did a Christopher Walken
on the
voice.
Door or something.
That's okay. I did a Christopher Walken impression. It was like okay.
For your stand-up.
This is my first time.
Yeah.
You know? He's like, hey man, it was pretty funny. You know, you should come go out more. He's like, hey, man, call me up if you need to, you know, if you want to, you know, hang out or whatever. I was like, cool. Yeah.
Nice that he was supportive.
He's, yeah, no, I mean, all my experience in stand-up, a lot of it has been, like, very supportive. I mean, you know, you bomb, and then you do well, and people like you outside of it. So I was already kind of doing it. I was like, oh, I should just focus in on that more because I realized what a great scene it was. And I had already had friends out here that were doing stand-up comedy, like Ralph Hardesty. When I moved here, he was just opening up for Hannibal. Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, dude, you made it. You know, wow, cool. And then my other friend, Derek, had moved here in Austin, to Austin. He was working with David Cross. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I gotta start doing a little bit more comedy because I love David Cross. So I would love to work with that guy someday. Or Hannibal, whatever. So, or whoever wants to work with me. Christian Shaw, this there. Thing. Just kidding. TFA, hello. This is my chance. I'm here, baby. I'm here in Austin. Come find me. That's why I started doing comedy. Because I found out how amazing it is here. And I found it out right away, too. It was like two or three months.
After moving here?
Yes. I was like, that's why I'm here. I'm not here because of that. I'm here because of this. And then that's why I'm here.
Right on.
All right, so yeah. So I looked up stuff online and found New Movement.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day how I found the New Movement. I said, Google.
Yeah, Googled improv classes.
Put improv in, and then...
God bless Google keywords.
Yeah, yeah. That's it was
whatever
a great
analytics they've got going on, they're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true, because when you Google it, comes right up.
Uh-huh.
So crazy.
Yeah.
Taken.
Yeah.
Are you doing any of the other theaters in town right now?
Not. Okay. No, I'm just still from the New Movement. I haven't taken any classes anywhere else yet. But, word on the street is, I might be taking another class in February. Somewhere. Not the New Movement, because I already took all those, but...
Yeah.
Probably somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Are you?
Right. Yeah,
are
I
you,
just started.
Are you?
Yeah, yeah. The advanced, yeah, the A1.
A1?
Yeah, it used to be
A7.
No, there's a... Yeah, there's some sort of... Yeah, yeah.
I might have to be in that then.
You can easily sign up for the advanced. You just get in touch with Dave Buckman, and it's like it's like an advanced group. It's a curriculum for all the people that are already graduated.
Right. Had a bunch of
states. I emailed them today.
Definitely a need.
So yeah. I emailed them today. So hopefully they'll write me back, and if not, then I'll just ask you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I hope I can start soon, like next month.
Yeah, sure. I tried to get in November, and they were all full up. So. He said, I just said, put me on the wait list.
I'm probably going to be put on the wait list.
Yeah.
Great.
But you never know. People drop all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And it's a great program for the idea that, people who finish the programs. In fact, I think that's one of the big needs in town is there's so many people that have, like, you know, gone through a full program, and then at that point it's like, well, I don't necessarily need to start again.
Right.
I just need to keep working, but in a different way.
Yeah.
How do I do that?
Yeah.
And I think the advanced program over there is a good resource for people.
Yeah.
There's a few people that that I knew that came into town from Chicago that have moved here, you know, like in the past year or so. And we're talking about like, oh, I think I might want to start my own theater. And I was like, well, that's great because there's plenty of them. But if you'd like one of those, I was like, one of the things I would highly suggest is doing advanced classes because that's where the need is. That's what people want. There's so many people that are like do improv every day. They've got 1,000, you know, hours under their belt. They're not looking to go learn how to yes and again. They're like trying to, what's the next level? How can I use this in a different way? How can I like look at it from a different point of view? And I just think it's really important to be able to see it from different teachers' eyes and stuff like that. Though to a certain extent, one of the beauty of things is, you know, if you do go through certain programs, if you wait a little while, then all of a sudden the teachers change, and then you can take it again through the eyes of somebody totally different. So it becomes fun.
Well, then we can do that because we've interned there for so long. Once it's like, I'll take another class, please. I have 100 hours that I need to...
One of the... I mean, yeah, gosh. I'd
to use...
Oh, yeah, sure you definitely much. Can.
Yeah, I mean, the intern programs that they have... for students too is amazing. The one at T&M that they have is like, it turns it into it makes it a class. I mean, you go there for a class, and then you can intern. At that point, you get into the community itself, and then once you're in the community, then everything gets really fun. I think, and I think I've seen a lot of great people start off at the New Movement, and I've seen them come into age and be free and funnier and more alive, I think, through the program at T&M.
There are a lot of good people that have done very well, especially with the internship program, you know what I mean? Like, if they're around enough, they can get themselves involved. I mean, because what I usually tell my students is, like, if you're in front of them, people will put you in shows. Because they're like, we need somebody for this. So you, guy working at the door, do you want to do a bit in the show? We need to fill some time.
Yeah, it's
and
crazy.
Then there you
then
are, you're
get
on stage.
Into comedy festivals, like, right away. If you do, you get into Fun Fest. You know, my first year, we got into Fun Fest. We got the badges or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, sweet, homie badge, tight. And I was like, in.
So wild.
Really cool, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different kinds of situations like that. Like, the other thing is, at the other theaters, you know, the beauty of some of the internships there, like at the Hideout, you could potentially work at the coffee shop itself and then be making money and be earning towards classes. And it's like, hell yeah. Like, heck yeah, I want to be working at a downtown coffee shop, meeting all sorts of different people, especially, like, during Austin Film Festival this last year, I got, me and Aaron went and taught the, like, improv classes for the Austin Film Festival, so we got badges to go see stuff. So I was like, great. But while I was downtown, every time I wanted to eat or anything, I would go to the Hideout because I was like, well, I'm downtown. Where am I going to give my business? Like, let me give it to them because they're here and it's solid. And like, I know I'm not going to walk in and there's going to be like a big line of people with their like Chipotle coupons being like, excuse me, Austin Film Festival says I can get 2-for-1. I was like, all right, let me just go in the Hideout and there I know the people and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But it was like, I would tell everybody, hey, you should go down there. You should check that out because it's good food and you can relax for a second. You don't have to, like, wait in line. And it was just, it was fun to be part of the community, work on this, like, see this festival happening, not really be running it, but sort of witness a lot of this cool stuff that was going on. And then also to, like, try to give back to, you know, the sort of local business of, of Hideout to be like, you know, heck yeah.
Yeah, they have fun shows.
Oh, yeah, there's such fun people.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And what a location. I mean, even with the big old hotel thing that's being built next to it, when that thing's done, boy howdy, there's going to be just so much going on there. So.
Yeah, it's right down the street from the New Movement, you know?
Yeah, really I mean, cool. It's just great stuff
there's
going
that, and
on
there's
everywhere.
There's open mics everywhere, and there's improv on the south and north side, and improv, and, you know, just everything comedy all the time.
What's your, like, you know, next goal in your career for developing stuff? You want to, you were talking about writing, you want to maybe write some more. Is there like a certain kind of show you're interested in doing or getting to be a part of, anything like that?
I don't know. I think my goal is to figure out what my goal should be right now, because I'm coming I'm coming into terms with what I miss in life and what I need, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I need, I think I feel like I need to help people a little bit more. I think I need to go back to teaching. I would love to go back to teaching. I've been applying for jobs, full-time jobs back in LA and other states and stuff like that. And if I did get one, I would make that my thing, because it's, I'm finally realizing how great it has been for me to have the opportunity to be in front of, you know, 120 students a semester and teach them communication and public speaking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So right now I'm kind of like, oh man, I got to figure it out. I don't know. I mean, because it's my third year in Texas, and it's either go home or be a Texan. It really is. Because I got to be from Texas now. I can't be from LA. I'm not from LA. I've been here for 3 years. You know, I've been here for 3 years. I'm still from LA. It's just that, and that's because I'm not saying I'm from Texas, and it's finally getting to me. I'm starting to know more people in the neighborhoods over where I live now. I'm working with a famous chef in Austin, and he knows everybody. So working with him gets me to know all these other companies and all these other people that are from Austin, that are from Texas, that have been here for 20, 30 years. And there's become more of an opportunity for me to kind of get my roots down. And I never thought about that. I thought I was going to do whatever I want all my whole life and not have to worry about where I live. But now that I'm getting older, I feel like I need to figure it out. Am I going to stay here? Am I going to move? I don't know. But it's kind of close, man. I got to figure this shit out.
No, it is interesting. I moved a ton. I mean, like, because I'm from Boston, but now I've lived outside of Boston longer than I lived in Boston. So now I don't, you know, when people say, where are you from? And it's like, well, I guess I'm from Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I lived in Boston, Massachusetts, I lived there from, you know, 0 to 18. But now I'm 38, so I've lived 20 years outside of it. So at this point, I've exceeded the number of years not being in that place.
Mm-hmm.
And so to a certain extent, like, I know what you're saying, like, I kind of consider myself a Texan because I've been here for a significant part of my life. And my husband and I had a conversation about, like, you know, what are we going to do? Like, are we going to stay here forever? Should we lay down roots and, like, really be Austinites forever? Because, like, I'm having a kid, right? And I'm just a touch worried about raising a kid in Austin, just because Austin's a little... No, not even because it's kind of becoming the San Francisco of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of just because it's cushy, kind of just because everyone's nice and it's easygoing, and I kind of want to be like, listen, kid, this is not life.
Oh, no, he can find, like, the bad parts of Austin.
Sure, no, you're right.
He or she, I'm saying it's a he. Or...
It is a he.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, but no, you're right. I mean, of course there's plenty of bad parts. There's plenty of different situations. Where we used to live, we moved to a house, but now we used to live in an apartment. And when we moved from that apartment, that, like, an article went on the Austin Chronicle, and it was like, the most dangerous part of all of Austin. I was like, I was living there? What? But, I mean, even that, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of got to decide, am I going to really live here forever? Because if I'm going to really live here forever, the way that I deal with everything that I do has to change, because I'm playing the long game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like, if this doesn't work out, fuck this shit. Like, I've been doing for so many years where, like, when New York didn't excite me anymore, I was like, I'm out, bitches. Like, when, like, Massachusetts didn't excite me before, I was like, never coming back. Like, I don't think that's the case anymore. And Chris and I were talking about, like, his career and my career, and it was like, realistically, this could be a good spot to just stay. I mean, between, because he does events and conventions, good town for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Music, good town for that.
Yeah.
Like, as far as I'm doing theater and then theater education, good town for that. Like, pretty much we could stay here forever, and it's kind of scary to, like, make that decision and say, well, I guess I'm going to live here, you know? But it's, I don't know. I mean, I keep saying to him, like, what if this happens? He goes, well, listen, it hasn't happened yet, so if it happens, we'll deal with it at the time. Because,
yeah.
like, we went to visit Las Vegas a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about, we were just staying on the Strip, so, like, we didn't see anything real, you know, like, as far as, like, living there. And when we were talking about it, he was like, yeah, it's kind of affordable to live here. There's, like, a pretty good film scene. Like, there's definitely a lot of conventions. He's like, we could plausibly live here. He's like, this could be a good spot. It's affordable. It's, like, got both of our career paths here in this mm-hmm. place. And we were like, oh, okay, cool. So it's funny that we still sort of, like, keep our options open where it's like, you know, if Austin does become San Francisco and we're priced out because we're poor. So if we get priced out, you know, it's an option for sure. But I don't know. I think it might be nice to put down roots. But you really have to be doing what you really want to do. And if you want to be... If you want to be, like, a professor, like you've been, and this town doesn't give you what you want, then, you know, you'd be open to going wherever. Go back
yeah.
to Iowa or, mm-hmm. or Illinois or
yeah.
California, wherever you have the contacts.
Yeah,
for
sure.
So
I'm going to keep applying for jobs and kind of maybe start getting more into what I should probably be doing to get that job, which is probably be going to more communication events and... educational events, stuff like that. But then I'm also going to just keep doing comedy. I'm not going to just, you know, throw all that away. So,
no, yeah.
I don't know. I might highly suggest there's a group in town called Mind Pop. And it works with high schools mostly. But Mind Pop is actually like an educational activities group. So, like, they are the people who help facilitate at all the local high schools all the, like, auxiliary programs that, like, you know, when they have, like, a Shakespeare rap group
mm-hmm.
or when they have somebody who's, like, teaching music but teaching it through, you know, like, xylophone or whatever,
mm-hmm.
whatever wild things that people in Austin like to do. Like, I did it because Adam Niederpruem got me connected through it to teach improv classes. And I would go and teach workshops at schools, or we would perform different sort of, like, educational things that, like, taught people how to, you know, like the project that he does where they do, like, water conservation and they do, like, a show to teach the kids water
Wendell
conservation.
Wendell or Adam Niederpruem?
Yeah, Adam Niederpruem runs the water conservation thing. Wendell works with
him.
Oh,
them. Okay.
But, like, the Mind Pop thing is a cool program that, like, is an outside of the school's program that can get you connected and potentially introduce you. Like, so if I see, because I still get invitations to it all the time. If I
mm-hmm.
see a thing, I'll let you know, because they'll have, like, a meet and greet
awesome.
Where it's, like, you just go and meet all the people that are got 1,000 different programs, and then you can be like, oh, you're the guys that are teaching dance in the Greenbelt, huh? Oh, you guys are doing, you know, teaching
uh-huh.
Shakespeare through singing rap, whatever,
yeah, yeah.
you know. All
cool.
sorts of wild
okay.
stuff.
Awesome.
So, I mean, it's there's a lot of interesting educational stuff. I don't know about the college stuff. Like I said, UT's kind of a insular place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to break in there.
Well, UT, yeah. They have a program set for people to teach there. So, yep.
I got nothing there.
I'm sorry, Patrick. I've been talking too much.
No, you're the guest.
Maybe
the
I
guest.
Should have
you're
talked. I should have spoke. I should have talked on the way here. That way I could be done with talking so much, because I feel like I've just been...
No, this...
You know, that's the point. The
what
point of the podcast
for?
Is to interview you.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's about you.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah.
Right. I don't want to hear you guys
you're
talk.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It was another podcast for that. Yeah.
I just wanted to... talking about putting down roots and stuff. Like, I accidentally kind of put down roots.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know, you know... what I was going to be doing. And it's like, I've been at one location, one address for the most I've ever been in my life now. So, which is only 8.5 years, but it's just like, so whenever it's like, hey, I got friends that move out to LA and they're like, oh, it's great. You should come out and stay with us for a bit. And I'm like, I got this thing here though. So
yeah.
It's like, before you start doing that, yeah, you got to figure out
yeah, yeah,
what it is you want to do. Cause I can't leave now and go do Steadicam, you know, out in LA or try to act out in LA. It's like, well, shouldn't have bought that house, you know? So
well, being a homeowner is a
terrible thing. You are right.
Is it?
No, it's not
great. I mean, in Austin, it's...
It is not great. Well, I live outside of the city limits, but it's one of those things, that if you're going to do it, you need to know you're going to be there.
Yeah, sell it.
So, yeah, I mean...
Sell it and get out of there. If it's horrible.
If I can work on that. 6% yeah. right away out the door. That's not great.
What is it?
6%, what does that mean?
Right, the real estate agents take 6% of your sale right away. So, yeah. I mean, unless you know somebody, then they may give you 4.8%. But
well, sure.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Well, it depends.
Would you move to LA if you sold your house?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm realistically, like, thinking of moving to LA to act is like, nah, that's not gonna happen. But doing film stuff, because that's what I got my degree for. It's like, man, maybe Steadicam or something out there. Do some specialty stuff.
I mean, it could happen. I mean, I think people, a lot of people saw La La Land, and I think they moved to L.A. but I think it could if you do it. I mean, everybody that I was working with in L.A. ended up being on something, you know. So it's just a matter of once you're there, and if you're living, especially if you're living in Hollywood, if you're taking classes and you're living in Hollywood, you made it. You know, it's just a perception thing from that point. Because so many people want to go. They dream of going to L.A.
Yeah.
And they don't.
Yeah.
Then people do. They go and they live there. And then they think, well, I need more. I need more. And it's just all about the perception of whether you made it or not. You know, yeah. Would you like working for a PR firm that works with famous celebrities? A lot of people would. No. I know, but a lot of people would. And if you did that and you're in L.A. and you're working with all these famous celebrities, then you could be like, okay, yeah, I kind of made it. So it's kind of like... It's a perception thing, you know.
Yeah.
You can't. But Austin has great potential for work for acting. Also, I mean, you get an agent here, and you can do things here. You can get national commercials here in Austin now.
Yeah, I would love to do it. At this point, to me, it's just like the question for me personally is just, do I enjoy doing it? Then keep going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if I can make this a career or job, great. Otherwise, I'm still having a great time. Yeah. Hang out with a lot of great people and do some really cool projects.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it would be easier if we were like really young, if we were like 22. Man, I wish I figured that out sooner. That's what I wish I did.
Yeah.
I wish I did stand up way earlier. I was performing stuff, but I wish I did it when I was 22 or 23. The kids, the people out here that are doing stand up, I mean, everybody's really young doing stand up in Austin, and some of the best people are like 21. 22 years old.
Yeah.
Like Andrew Clarkson, he's one of my favorites. He's hilarious. He's like 22, 23, something like that. Andrew Dismuse, I think, is the same. He's like 21 or something like that. And then there's all these other people that are like really young. DeFonso was really good, and he was only like 20, 21, 22.
Didn't he go off to LA?
He went to Chicago.
Oh,
I think. Or DC or something like that. I don't know. Chicago. But
I think his family's in DC.
Man. Not to say that you can't do it now, and especially stand-up. You can just do stand-up whenever you want, and love it and stuff like that. But good for them for knowing how to do stand-up so quickly.
Sure.
They make it look easy. They're awesome. Those young kids.
Yeah, but don't you think to a certain extent that maintaining in this business is consistency and persistence, like, because it's great if you're if you're talented at 21, but like if you can't handle continuously doing it, because the one thing that I hear from people is like they give up or they like can't handle the like grind of it. Like that's why I always, whenever I talk to older people like us who are, and I'm older, and you know, I was like, Adam and I are older than you, Patrick, but it's like... Patrick?
I'm just 34.
He's
34.
He's the youngest 34, yeah.
I'm only 28.
Okay, writing that down. Tell
only
everyone.
28. And it is the year 2016 still. Just to let you know.
But, you know, like, you really have to... The persistence of maintaining it, like, you have to keep doing it. You have to keep moving forward, you know what I mean? Like, because I think about staying here and what I'm doing, and it's like, okay, if I stay here, I'm kind of accepting that, like, being famous, I'm doing air quotes here, is not really an option. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's going to come to Austin and be all like, you're the one, you know? That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. I would have to go to New York or L.A. to move on that thing. But
and even there, they're not, nobody's going to go up to you and be like, you're the one.
No, they That's don't. In neither of those places,
yeah, if they do,
for
it's
sure.
Porn. Don't do it.
Right. Oh, well, yeah. You know, porn makes a lot of money.
It does. Lots and lots of money, but but maybe don't do it. But it's like, good Lord. But, like, at the same time, like, you know, you still have to keep working at it. I mean, it's like, hell, even porn actors, they you know, they do a couple, and then they're like, oh, nobody's interested in seeing your dick anymore. You know, and they move on to the next guy. You know, who's got the new dick? That's what I'm looking for.
Way to break down comedy.
Who's the new dick? But you know, I mean, whenever I see the kids that are good and talented, I hope for them that they can be persistent, that they can keep doing it, that they can last through some of the times that people say no. Like, you telling the story about the radio station, like, is so great. Because it was like, everyone kept being like, get out of here, kid. And you're like, okay, great. And then you'd come back and be like, but can I work here? And they'd be like, no, we hate you. And you're like, cool. Okay, a few weeks later, what's up? Like, that's the sort of persistence
that
you need.
That's where I learned in LA, if you really want something, you keep going back in.
Yeah.
You keep going back, and they keep saying no, and you keep going back, and they're finally like, okay, come on. You didn't do anything bad. you're not a serial killer, I guess, or something like that. Yeah, I mean,
That's how people have done anything like that. I mean, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you just keep appearing in front of their face, and then finally you're like, remember me? Mm-hmm. I'm that guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's
you're late. Again.
So I'm never disheartened when I see, like, this 21-year-old kid, he knows he's got so much talent. Because I was like, talent's like, you know, a drop in the bucket. It's not really exactly all you
True. No, it's because they're able to also go to every open mic every night.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I guess, like, I mean, you got to make that part of your lifestyle. And anybody that can do that, if you can go to, and you can do that in Austin. I don't know if you can do that anywhere else, you can do it here. You can do it every night here. And if you can turn that into your second job and not let a lot of stuff get in your way, like your health or money issues or anything like that, or girlfriend or whatever, blah, 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 excuses get in your way, you can really do it here.
Yeah.
You can go every day and you get noticed. Well, it's not just if you go every day, it's also, you know, you gotta be funny.
You gotta be funny.
A little bit. You gotta have something, you know?
Yeah. But I mean,
some people get something. They get something after years of doing it every day.
I thought you were gonna say this too, and I really think it's important. You gotta play the politics. You gotta, like, know the right people. You gotta, like, get in there. You gotta, like, get good slots on, because, like, an open mic's all well and good, but you need to, like, move up and book shows. You need to, like, learn who these people are, and then
be friendly,
those people who are like political, they're the ones who are getting to, like, your friends who it's like, oh, I work with, you know, I get to work with what's one of the comedians you mentioned earlier that your friends was working with. It's like
Conan?
It's like Dave Cross, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it was like,
Dave. David Cross.
I did. You said Dave Ross and then David Cross. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just a big name dropper.
But it's like that the person who worked with them was in a good position, happened to be in a spot to be like not the headlining comic, but like maybe the opening comic. You know, you see people like, do you remember Ashley Barnhill?
Mm-mm.
Ashley Barnhill was a comedian a couple of years ago. She's moved to LA now, but she was just doing open mics for years and years. When I first moved to Austin, she was an open micer. She was somebody that I would see at block parties. She was somebody who would just do open mics around, and I met her through, you know, people, and she just kept working, and every time there was a festival where famous comics came in, she would go in and she would just politely go over and meet them and, like, get them to recognize her name, and then eventually she was opening for Marc Maron. I went to see Marc Maron at, like, Moon Tower a couple years ago, and she was the opening comic, and I was like, fuck yeah. And then she moved, she met him, he liked her, he hired her to be his assistant for a little while.
Oh.
She went to L.A., worked for him for a little while, and then from that connection got other gigs and is now in L.A. doing other things as well. But it's like, that's how you do it. You just keep connecting with people, mm-hmm. you know, going to those parties. That's the hardest part for me is the social aspect mm-hmm. because, like, and I know one would say to me, like, what? I can't believe you'd be afraid of social. But it's like, I just don't like the glad handing of, like, oh, hello. Yes, I'm Amy Jordan.
Yeah.
You need to know who I am. I'm very important. Right. Like, I just can't. It's
There's
so hard
a lot of stuff
me.
That happens outside of those parties and stuff like that, too. I mean, a lot of comedians go to mugshots.
Sure.
If you go to mugshots and you do comedy, then you start doing this hangout thing and stuff like that. But there's so much stuff that happens outside of that that I think is that the consistency of your work kind of shows more. So it kind of requires... Colin Quinn stopped drinking when he was, like, in the early 80s, I think, right before he got remote control on MTV. He stopped drinking and he told me... because I told him that I stopped drinking too, and he's like, oh, congratulations, you know, blah, blah. And I was like, asking him what it's like. I was like, did you lose any friends? And he said, yeah, I lost all of them. I lost all my friends from not drinking anymore because I couldn't hang out, and I didn't want to go to bars all the time. And I was like, oh shit. And he's like, yeah, it's really hard because you gotta you have to face yourself and you have to face your boredom, and if you can do that and you can stay persistent, then that's something else. And, you know, he started off with, like, Chris Rock and stuff like that, and Adam Sandler, so that worked out for him. But it doesn't always have to be about partying. It has to be about consistency. Just like you're saying, what you're saying is the consistency. Keep going out, keep doing stuff. And then you got to find it. You know, it's going to take a while, but if you do it, you can make it if you believe in yourself. There are some comics I see, they go out every day. They go out every night. They're at every open mic, you know. And they're working really hard. And I think some of them are just like, booyah, I'm here. Oh, my God, oh, it's this guy. He's the best because he goes to every open mic. And there's other people that go there, and they're like, hey, I'm here. And they're like, oh, hey, this guy's here again. He's here all the time, does the same jokes. He's not really feeling it or whatever. I think as long as they stay consistent, I think those people, too, can probably make it in a while. But they got to grow, and they got to get older and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, being older isn't the worst.
What the fuck am I talking about? Jesus.
No, we went down the rabbit hole of, like,
talking about comedy.
A 21-year-old
You guys always talk
comedian.
About comedy?
We talk a lot about comedy. We don't always talk about it. You know, it depends. A lot of our guests are improvisers only, so we talk a lot about improv.
Okay.
You know, we'll talk about that kind of thing. In fact, I was wondering, you know, as far as, like, your the slam poetry in my mind connects to improv, because, like, that's how I allowed myself to get into improv.
I used to improv a poem. It was called the Ass Poem, and I would at slam poetry tournaments I would go and I would have most of this poem memorized, but a lot of it also was timing and getting people to laugh. And what it was, I would set the mic up so that it was pointing at my butt, and I would do Ace Ventura, the ass thing,
right.
You know, and it would be, you know, my ass poem, and it was my ass, it was me talking out of my ass, and it was a song heard round the world.
Oh my God.
It made lots of people angry, and people loved it.
Made lots of people angry.
Oh yeah, because it's competition, and people take competition so seriously sometimes, especially in Chicago and New York and so on. Yeah.
Oh.
So I'd be going up against, like, Chicago teams, and I remember this one guy came up to me. Oh my God! And he was on Deaf Comedy, you know, Deaf Poetry Slam or whatever, and blah blah. And he was always so perfect, and he loved all his own poems, and he just was the shit. He came up to me. He's like, oh, "Hey man, next time you win a poetry competition, you need to take it more seriously."
Yeah.
And I was like, what, dude? And then Mark Smith, the creator of slam poetry, came up to me and said, you're fucking awesome. How the fuck did you come up with this shit? You're great. So I was like, awesome.
Yeah.
If Mark Smith tells me I'm great, then fuck off.
Yeah, people competing, of course, are going to get mad.
Yeah, he created the whole thing, so it's all his fault.
That's so funny.
Mark Smith created slam poetry.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
He's well, great. Good.
No,
thanks,
thank you very
Adam.
Much for
I
having
really
me,
appreciate
having me on. I'm
That's
sorry it took
good.
So long.
No, you're perfect. Don't worry about it. An hour and a half is our general,
great.
Like, about as long as most
it's
of our podcasts
time.
Are.
It's a really long time.
But we
time.
Like chatting. You know, we want to just get deep with everybody. I feel like we got to a good thing. I learned so much about you tonight. Mm-hmm. That was really wonderful.
I guess maybe if this goes in the archives of things to pull out later in life, we can... revisit this. And,
oh, yeah, you can always come back whenever you like.
I would like everyone in Austin to listen to this podcast, not mine, but anybody else's, because this is one of the best podcasts in Austin right now.
Oh, you're very sweet.
Yeah, it is. It's on the website, Karina's website, austincomedy.info, and it's 45th. You guys have recorded more, like 50 people or something like that. So keep going, because podcasts don't last long. I mean, they're coming in and out, man. There's been a lot of people in Austin that have had podcasts, and they're not doing it anymore. So as long as you guys can keep this going, that's congratulations. It's a big leap.
Yeah. No, I'm down for... I'm a big consistency kind of person. When I told somebody that I'd been doing The Neighborhood for 6 years, they're like, seriously?
Congratulations on The Neighborhood, too. You got the weekly slot now. And I remember doing that with you, and that's kind of what started me off in Austin. Doing that with you, so that's great. I love The Neighborhood, and me and Patrick worked together so much. We worked together on that too. So
Patrick really started The Neighborhood, never left.
You are a genius with. Oh, I have a sketch I need to talk to you about.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'll just tell you right now.
Sure.
Hopefully, you don't.
We can cut it right here, right?
Okay. Yeah, we'll see you later, guys.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.